As World War II drew to a close, the United States rushed to collect as many former German National Socialist scientists as possible through a secret mission called Operation Paperclip. As some had been branded war criminals at Nuremberg, the U.S. military whitewashed the backgrounds of many scientists in an attempt to justify hiring them. Knowing that trouble was brewing already with the Soviet Union, these scientists were employed by the U.S. in a wide variety of roles, from military intelligence and the CIA, to public space programs like NASA, as well as top-secret technology development in deep underground military bases, such as Area 51. Wernher von Braun was a member of various German political organizations, including the SS. He was chief developer of the V-2 rocket, the first ballistic missile ever created. After Operation Paperclip, Braun became the director of the Development Operations Division of the Army Ballistic Missile Agency. While there, he developed the Jupiter C rocket, which was used to launch America's first satellite. He was also credited as being instrumental in leading the moon mission. While there are those who believe much of what was shown to us regarding the lunar landing was staged on a movie set, it still cannot be denied that we did send up giant rockets and shuttles, and this technology achievement could not have been accomplished without the German scientists' involvement and leadership. In the past few years, stories of other, more amazing schemes from the Third Reich have appeared, stories of intercontinental missiles and orbiting space planes, all adorned with swastikas. While it is widely accepted that the National Socialists were defeated with Germany's formal surrender in 1945, this is only partly true. Many claim that the Nazi elite were able to covertly develop saucer-shaped craft far in advance of anything possessed by the US and established a secret subterranean base in Antarctica which some of their elite retreated to, eventually defeating a post-World War II attack by Allied forces in 1946, led by Admiral Byrd, who retreated after suffering substantial damage and casualties. This is better known as Operation High Jump. While the United States and other nations with central banks continue to suppress this storyline and the free technology involved in these craft, in order to maintain the status quo of their oil-based economy, the Antarctic Breakaway Group are said to have established a viable Star Wars-like space civilization. Now, as wild as all this sounds, what would such a civilization be like? We can wonder, can't we? The cosmos is all that there is, or ever was, or ever will be. Our feeblest contemplations of the cosmos stir us. There is a tingling in the spine, a catch in the voice, a faint sensation as if a distant memory or falling from a height. We know we are approaching the greatest of mysteries. Carl Sagan.
One of the great revelations of the age of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, somehow vulnerable, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Here we are on a planet which is about 5,000 million years old. The sun around which it goes is not much older. It is part of a galaxy which is perhaps 10 or 12,000 million years old, which is one of perhaps hundreds of thousands of millions of other galaxies.
While I never agreed much with Carl Sagan politically, I was always in awe by his ability to stir the imagination and to make the world seem so small, therefore bringing us all that much closer together. In pre-World War II Germany, the Vril and Thule societies, whose members included some who would later become notable members of the German National Socialist Party, believed that many ancient civilizations owed their origins to refugees from Atlantis. They advanced the idea of a subterranean civilization ruled by an ancient parent race who had mastered a mysterious force called Vril. They were said to have survived the antediluvian cataclysms which ended the Ice Age, and passed on their guarded occult knowledge through initiation into sacred mystery schools. Nationalist Germany claimed the territory of New Swabia in Antarctica, sent an expedition there in 1938, and began building secret, deep underground bases below the ice, accessible only by U-boat or submarine. Organizations such as the Vril Society and later the German government itself conducted research into psychic phenomenon, advanced propulsion technology, saucer-shaped aircraft, and actually defeated Allied forces in 1946, led by Admiral Byrd, who then retreated in disgrace. The mission is still largely classified as Operation High Jump, in a continued effort to suppress this Vril free technology in favor of maintaining the status quo of an oil and debt-based global slave economy. My name is Stoll, Axel Stoll. I'm a doctor of natural sciences. I'm familiar with all natural sciences and look at the problems in its entirety. Are you also Aryan? Yes, of course. I'm of Germanic heritage, that's all. My father was a military officer and volunteered to the SS during World War II. He was obligated to have an Aryan certificate. It's interesting, almost everyone was in the military, and your family had to have an Aryan certificate. Yes, my father, of course, all military personnel, and that's the reason why I'm quite knowledgeable in military technology. Here's the German flying saucers, developments, as you can see. These are the early models, saucer models 1, 2, and 3. And these are the Hanabu flying saucers, different models. Hanabu, yes, the name Hanabu, Hanabur. It's of Germanic origin. There's a swastika painted on it, yes, on the initial ones. The moon is populated, Mars is populated by Nazis, and a few more planets. Probably also several other fixed star systems, but that's a guess. But that would mean that the moon and Mars is inhabited by Nazis? Yes, that's correct. The backside of the moon. Have you seen a UFO? Yes, several. Where? Here in the area of Berlin. Several. They perform vigorous aerial maneuvers. The movement, zack, zack, zack. And they're piloted by the Aryans? Yes, that's correct. So where did the Aryans come from? Presumably, but I can't prove it, from Aldebaran. From that star system. From the star system of the head of the Taurus, 68 light years away. With effects faster than light, it's only a short hop. So the Aryans basically weren't born on this planet? No, not born on this Earth. Well, it was also so-called Vril Society in the Third Reich. And they had telepathic contacts to Aldebaran with the Vril women, mediums. What about the wisdom of the Aryans? Are they more intelligent? How high is their IQ? High, very high. Were there also black people on Aldebaran? No. This planet is a prison planet. Between the late evening of February 24th, 1942, and the early morning hours of February 25th, the City of Angels went into a state of panic as what were initially believed to be German or Japanese enemy aircraft were spotted over the city. Taking place on the heels of the Pearl Harbor bombing, and just one day after a confirmed submarine attack off the Santa Barbara coast, the UFO sighting touched off a massive barrage of anti-aircraft fire, with some 1,400 shells shot into the skies above Los Angeles and lasting the better part of the evening. Many people believe the aircraft were extraterrestrial, with one eyewitness even describing an object he's seen as looking like an enormous flying lozenge, and some accusing the government of a cover-up, especially after conflicting accounts of the incident from the Navy and War Department. As if to confirm public fears of extraterrestrial attack, one famous LA Times photograph emerged from the incident showing an ominous, saucer-like object hovering over the city. This much-debated photograph inspired America's first major UFO controversy a full 5 years before Roswell.
And now for news of our own West Coast, we take you to Los Angeles and the report of Byron Palmer. Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning. The anti-aircraft guns began barking during a blackout ordered by the 4th Interceptor Command at 2:25 a.m. The unidentified object, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach. Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles, far slower than an airplane. Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a wide arc along the coastal area. Concussion of the shells could be felt in downtown Los Angeles, 15 miles away. U.S. Army planes quickly took to the dark skies, but whether they contacted the object has not been announced. Army officials say they will not comment until they receive a full report of the action. Although some watchers say they saw airplanes in the air, semi-official sources say they probably were the U.S. Army's pursuit. Several observers say they saw one or more planes spotlighted by 20 or 30 searchlights. The object moved southward, presumably over Huntington Park at the western edge of Los Angeles, and on southward to about Long Beach on the coast. By 3:30 a.m., observers said the object appeared to be over the south of Long Beach. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and kept it centered in their glare. Shells frequently could be seen bursting near the object, but none appeared to hit it. The shooting stopped about 3:30 a.m. The shooting brought warfare to the front door of this city of 1.25 million population for the first time since December 7th. Already, it was alert to the presence off the Southern California coast of a Japanese submarine, which had pumped 25 shells into an oil field north of Santa Barbara Monday evening. Because of the presence of the submarine, a three-hour alert was ordered at dusk last night, and civilian authorities stood at their posts while the Army and Navy continued their search for the submersible. The evening alert ended at 10:23 p.m., but another was sounded at 2:22 a.m., and the blackout followed within 3 minutes. It covered Los Angeles County from Santa Monica to Pomona. At 2:27, all Southern California radio stations were ordered off the air except those in San Diego. Approximately 20 minutes after the firing died down, the ship returned and headed westward from Long Beach toward Santa Monica. The guns went into action again, hurling round after round of shells at the object. The second barrage appeared to be closer to downtown Los Angeles, since watchers could hear the concussion of the guns more clearly and the flash of bursting shells was brighter. Then the ship disappeared for the second time over the ocean. We return you now to CBS in New York.
The Battle of Los Angeles did in fact claim 6 lives. 3 civilians were killed directly by friendly fire, while 3 others suffered heart attacks during the event. A number of buildings were also damaged by a barrage of more than 1,400 shells from anti-aircraft guns, with no visible effect on the craft itself. It eventually drifted leisurely south towards Long Beach and vanished from view. Some people have suggested that the Japanese were launching planes from a secret base in Mexico, while others theorized that they had developed a submarine capable of carrying aircraft. Of course, the Germans were also rumored to have U-boats large enough to launch aircraft from, but for some reason, many technological aspects of World War II is still kept classified, as is Operation High Jump, where the Allied armed forces invaded Antarctica in 1946 with a massive armada consisting of thousands of soldiers and 3 aircraft carriers, yet the public is still kept in the dark despite over 70 years having passed since the United States, Britain, and the other Allies suffered their mysterious defeat in 1947. It's almost as if there's still some sort of threat that remains out there. Otherwise, why the secrecy? And to whom exactly would this threat be directed at? One needs only look at the data that came out of the collapsed former Soviet Union, and the truth concerning the events of World War II reveal itself quite nicely. Americans have always been interested in the technomagical legacy of Germany. There's absolutely no doubt about this. Part 1, Base. At the beginning of 1947, yet another expedition by the American explorer Richard Byrd arrived on Antarctic shores. It was a very strange expedition. Unlike his previous 3, this one was completely financed by the U.S. Navy. Operation High Jump was its code name. Under the command of Admiral R. Byrd, there was a powerful military squadron, an aircraft carrier, 12 surface ships, 1 submarine, more than 20 airplanes and helicopters, and about 5,000 people on staff. You will agree, a strange team for a scientific expedition. December 2nd, 1946. Before the start of his expedition, Admiral Byrd, at a press conference, said, "My expedition is military in nature," giving no further details. At the end of January 1947, full-scale aerial reconnaissance began surveying the Antarctic region of Queen Maud Land. It all went to plan in the first weeks. Tens of thousands of photos were taken. Suddenly, the inexplicable happened. The 6-month expedition terminated after only 2 months. Fleeing the Antarctica coast, it was a real fast retreat. They lost the destroyer, almost half their carrier-based aircraft, dozens of sailors and officers. The commission investigation members of the United States Congress, Admiral Byrd, said the following: "In the event of another war, America can be attacked by an enemy that has the ability to fly from pole to pole with incredible speed." What made the Americans flee? In 1945, 18 months before Admiral Byrd's expedition began, 2 German submarines entered Mar del Plata, port in Argentina, surrendering to authorities. These were no ordinary submarines. They were from the so-called Führer convoy. This was a top-secret fleet fulfilling missions. Details have remained a secret till now. The submarine crews were reluctant to cooperate. Even so, the Americans learned a few things. The commander of U-boat U-530 spoke of his involvement in an operation codenamed Valkyrie 2. 2 weeks before the war's end, the U-boat U-530 left the quay heading for the shores of Antarctica. On board of the submarine were passengers with faces covered in bandages, as well as Third Reich relics. The commander of another U-boat, U-977, Heinz Schäfer, later testified that he followed the same route. It was found that the German submarines repeatedly followed the Antarctic route. But why go there? Antarctica. Recently, huge underground lakes were found, a kilometer deep under the ice. The lake's temperature is 18 degrees Celsius. Located above the water surface are dome-like vaults filled with warm air. It's possible that from these heated lakes, a constant river of warm water flows into the ocean. For thousands of years, these warm rivers may have formed large underground ice tunnels, perfect for the construction of secret bases. From the ocean's edge, any submarine can easily pass under the coastal ice into these tunnels. Here it was, a complete base, immune from storms and polar cold, totally hidden from outsiders and out of the enemy's reach. Many assumed that in case of a defeat in the war, Antarctica would be a safe haven for the elite of the Third Reich. By 1942, transfer of inhabitants to New Swabia had begun, including scientists, engineers, members and representatives of the Nazi Party and German state. Certain secret industrial technologies were also transferred from Germany. Post-war, the Americans recruited German scientists to work in the United States, but were shocked to find thousands of highly qualified Third Reich specialists had vanished and weren't listed as dead. Over 100 submarines had also vanished, never to be found. Who did these flying saucers belong to? Could it have been the Nazi Germany? Part 2, Annenerbe. After the war, in Nazi secret archives, intriguing photos and drawings were discovered. They proved that German scientists were actually engaged in the development of disc-shaped aircraft. At the time, nothing like this existed. How had Nazi scientists managed to make such a technological leap? Annenerbe Society, the most mysterious organization in the Third Reich. Even now, the secret services of leading powers hunt for its secrets. But why? It's simple. This was the only known historical structure engaged in the study of the occult and mysticism to have state funding and support. No organization in the world had at its disposal such a volume of data or had such influence on the development of occult technology as the Annenerbe. The Annenerbe founders were drawn from the highest ranks of the Third Reich. Research on occult knowledge and paranormal phenomena by the Annenerbe received blessings from SS Reichsführer Himmler, who not only acted on his own initiative but also with instructions from Adolf Hitler. Officially, the society was founded in 1935 and was intended to explore the historical roots of the German nation. Annenerbe, when translated, means legacy of the ancestors. However, the society's scope of interest was broader than ancient German history study. Third Reich leaders understood an army's size wasn't necessary to win future wars. Therefore, they adopted the so-called concept of qualitative superiority. Therefore, one can win a war with relatively low quantitative forces while utilizing high qualitative forces to provide them with qualitative superiority. The Annenerbe brought in specialists in the occult, non-traditional, and paranormal knowledge in order to achieve a breakthrough in an area where their opponents would not be competent. Nazi ideology was based on the theory that in the past there was a powerful Earth civilization with access to secrets of the universe. Somewhere, encrypted and scattered, this higher knowledge was preserved. Specifically, they were tasked with reviving the superhuman in Germany. In their role as an ancient Aryan descendants, they were very interested in Atlantis. Their scientists believed it, the Aryan race's native home. Therefore, Germany was the rightful heir to Atlantean technological knowledge. According to the librarian from one of the Postonsky libraries, in March of 1945, he witnessed Soviet troops approaching German territory. The Annenerbe were evacuating a library carrying away 140,000 volumes. The library catalog would be very interesting. It's possible the Annenerbe learned something incredible about Antarctica. They made the study of this continent one of the main Nazi leadership goals. Actually, the SS were after very specific knowledge. Studies were carried out concerning the paranormal abilities of employees of the Annenerbe. The results were recorded on personal files. When the war started, officers with these paranormal abilities, along with others who displayed paranormal skills, were merged into a single Annenerbe department. Unfortunately, there are no records on what this department was working on, or more importantly, what results were achieved. One of the main objectives pursued by the Annenerbe experts was the use of paranormal abilities to contact unknown beings. Part 3. Saucers. Secret Thule Society members, the Annenerbe's predecessor, among the selected were two experienced mediums, or contactees, as we say today. One of them hides under the mysterious name of Sigrun. The other is Maria Orsic from Zagreb. She speaks of strange things in a trance state, from a civilization in the Taurus constellation. She receives incredible technical information. This knowledge shocked no one. On the contrary, it attracted huge interest, as it concerned the construction of an unusual flying vehicle, which could alter the flow of time around it. A step toward the dream of the secret society. A time machine penetrating deep into history, obtaining the knowledge of ancient high civilizations. It's no surprise concerning the well-known fact, namely, most of the staff of the American Antarctic stations are personnel of the United States National Security Agency, employees of American military, technical intelligence, electronic intelligence, and Central Intelligence Agency employees. These categories represent the main research personnel on American Antarctic stations.
Start, 2, 1, boost to ignition.
Dr. Wernher von Braun was one of the most important champions of space exploration in the 20th century. Born in what was then the German Empire and is now Poland, he became enamored as a youth with the possibilities of space exploration by reading science fiction, which eventually prompted von Braun to later master calculus and trigonometry so that he could understand the physics of rocketry. From his teenage years, von Braun had held a keen interest in spaceflight, becoming involved in the German Society for Space Travel and then to work for the German Army to develop liquid fuel rockets in conjunction with Dr. Hermann Oberth, an Austro-Hungarian-born German physicist and engineer. What you are looking at is a rocket launch as seen from the International Space Station on November 16, 2018, made from 2,050 individual time-lapse photographs. An achievement made possible by contributions from many German scientists, like von Braun, who after World War II were utilized by Allied governments and exploited for their knowledge of advanced propulsion technology. This same technology, according to the official word from NASA, was used to safely get man to the moon and back. I say according to NASA because the claim is disputed by some who say that the moon missions were at least in part staged. While the official narrative remains controversial, even more controversial are allegations that the German Nationalist Party had obtained even more advanced technology and had already been to the moon long before the creation of NASA itself.
If you would just kind of give us a background and an outline of just what was the German saucer project, as we understand at this point.
The German saucer project was an offshoot of their advanced aviation and space research and development. Disbelieving at the beginning the existence of German saucers, I made a thorough search of books on advanced German aerospace technology, and what I discovered was astonishing. The Germans were the first to develop, seriously to develop the rocket engines, the turbojet engine, the pulse jet, the ramjet. They were the first to test a rocket-powered airplane in flight, a rocket-powered, a turbojet-powered, and a pulse jet-powered airplane, piloted planes. They were the first one to introduce them in combat service. That's all what we know.
They also developed the flying wing.
They developed the flying wing, the Holten brothers. They developed a turbojet flying wing. They were working on monstrous intercontinental bombers of bizarre designs. I have several hundred slides of that I've taken from books from the public domain of designs that were so ahead. The Germans developed, according to some even more advanced rumors, they developed the time machine. According to other rumors, the bombs that were thrown over Hiroshima and Nagasaki were German. The American project went along other lines, and the bombs that were produced were much bulkier and impossible to load on an airplane. A light-emitting rocket hit the moon in 1938, unmanned rocket. A light-emitting propulsion that I've never heard of, different from anti-gravity, different from rocket propulsion, probably very economic. Free energy, quite because you can't load car batteries to power the laser that would emit the light to take the rocket to the moon, obviously. In 52, German engineers built for Juan Perón a cold fusion electricity producing plant in Argentina.
Flying discs that were powered by conventional engines, basically.
By the engine, same engine that they used for the Messerschmitt 262 fighter.
Would be a conventional engine rather than an exotic.
Conventional turbojet engine running on mundane, low-grade aviation kerosene.
There's a significant body of evidence out there that suggests that a significant number, if not all, UFOs come from right here on this planet. And we're going to look at that evidence. There's a book written by Renato Vesco, an Italian author who was in the military, Italian military, during World War II, and he had access to some very interesting files, German files, on German flying disc technology, that the Germans were developing flying discs along with other bizarre aircraft during World War II, and that's what we're going to be looking at, and what developed from that, and some of the UFOs we see today, are they product of that technology?
Well, I would say through the research that I've done and the people that I've talked to, that the majority of what we see are actually built here on this planet. Mm-hmm. And maintained and flying on this planet. Mm-hmm. But it's really, you know, it's awful hard to believe, still even for me, that our government is keeping this from us. Mm-hmm. I mean, here we're supposed to be, we're touted as the greatest country in the world, mm-hmm. and that we have so many freedoms here, and that the freedom of speech reigns supreme over all of the world here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And yet, it doesn't.
Right.
And yet it doesn't.
Well, you know, it goes back to the days of the Mercury flights and NASA, or the moon rockets and so forth. Our technology was the biggest, the bestest, the mostest. And, you know, if this is a product of our technology, this is, you know, an incredible stride for mankind and for this country. So, you know, why aren't we talking about it? Why don't we wave our flag a little bit and say, hey, this is what we've created.
We've got Vladimir on the phone, and we'll be asking him some questions. Please feel free, if we have time, to call in. We'll try to get some right at the end. We're going to be talking to him about the German saucer in the 30s and 40s. Jim had the opportunity to interview him while we were in Phoenix both times, wasn't it, Jim?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh.
The part that showed some of the pictures and stuff was last year, and then...
I've seen Vladimir three times. I saw him when he was here in May of 91 for the World Congress, and then he covered the same material again in the Congress in Phoenix last year, and then again this last month in Phoenix again.
And nobody's doing this. Roger, you knew him when you were living in Los Angeles. Wasn't that true? Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's almost about 3.5 years ago. He's a very regular attender of a lot of UFO affairs over there. So he's a very difficult man to have in the audience. He asks very pointed questions. He goes right to the heart of things.
I know. Mm-hmm. He told me before... we came on the air, he asked me to not talk about a certain subject, and we'll try to let that go. Are you on the phone? Vladimir?
Yeah. Very easy. I can answer your question with a counter question. I heard stories that Tesla developed a gas ray, actually a dematerialization ray for the U.S. Army in the late 30s. You would point it to any object, a stone, a truck, a tank, a soldier, anything, and the thing would disappear. The ray would shift the target, the vibrations of the target, a little bit off time, basically and technically putting it in a different time continuum, making it disappear from our continuum. So anything that you pointed from here on to the horizon would disappear. I mean, whole armies would be annihilated in seconds. Why didn't the Americans use this thing to demolish the Germans much earlier? Obviously, no government uses its most advanced and secretive technology. They always try to keep it for a more special purpose. So, the V-1, the Buzz Bomb, and the V-2 were fairly advanced rockets. Anyway, nobody had them from the other side, so the Germans were using some of their advanced technologies. But the saucers, they were very well guarded, and the Germans were preparing a retreat to the South Pole, especially after 42, when the guys with the brains in Berlin realized that they would lose the war. Anybody who knew the real industrial might of England, Russia, and United States combined realized that, what proved at the end of the war that there were 500,000 Allied planes against 100,000 German planes produced. For every German plane in the air, there were 5 Allied planes. I mean, figures that are not very often discussed in the press. So knowing this as early as probably 42, 43, the Germans started making tremendous effort to move hundreds of thousands of people to the South Pole colony and to keep the saucer's existence as secretive as possible. At the same time, Renato Vesco, he's considered the Italian Werner von Braun, the research and development boss of the Italian Air Force during the war, wrote in his book Intercept But Don't Shoot that there have been dozens of Foo Fighter attacks and Kugelblitz attacks on Allied bomber formations with devastating results that have been documented by the Allied air forces. They did not reach the Allied press for obvious reasons. I mean,
Okay, Vladimir, what would you say is the best evidence, or the most compelling evidence for the fact that the German saucer projects were a reality?
Funnily enough, the simplicity of obtaining anti-gravity. If anti-gravity is really obtained by simple spinning of any object along a vertical axis, as is the claim of two Japanese scientists from Tohoku University, Hayasaka and Takeuchi, who published a very important seminal paper in 1989 in the Physical Review Letters, one of the top five physics journals in the world. Simple spinning of a used airplane gyroscope would reduce its weight. It's official academic scientific literature. If it is that easy to produce anti-gravity, if one would not need the fancy science fiction hardware that Bob Lazar is revealing in his film, that our government has been secretly back engineering in Nevada test site by using a hand-me-down alien technology utilizing element 159, maybe this is a legitimate anti-gravity drive, and you can obtain anti-gravity even by this means. But normally, anti-gravity is very easy to produce. If it is that easy, then you can couple every existing engine in your arsenal with spinning lenticular airframe and produce an anti-gravity craft. And the Germans did just that. They had piston engines with propellers spinning the craft around. They had Vanco engines with propellers. They had turbojets, pulse jets, ramjets, rocket engines in inboard and outboard variations, custom-made, standard aviation turbojets they were using on the Messerschmitt 262 plane, standard rocket engines they were using for the Messerschmitt 163 rocket plane. Rocket engines probably for the V2 were used for the rocket-propelled craft that could go in the outer atmosphere. The simplicity of anti-gravity. This is probably the biggest argument that the Germans really had these things. On top of that, we've probably discovered we have the largest collection of original newspaper articles from Germany from the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Okay, but then also the reports of bomber crews, Allied bomber crews, who witnessed Foo Fighters and similar disc-type craft approach, as they would were in their bomb runs over Germany and France,
yeah,
and so forth, the alleged Foo Fighters,
yeah,
would be seen approaching the bombers from the ground. They'd be coming up from German airspace rather than from above, correct?
I mean, they would be seen approaching them from everywhere because they would come from underground, they would from the ground surface level, they would be hanging on the air waiting for the bombers to come, like glowing Christmas tree ornaments in the night skies of Germany. But they were so maneuverable, they could fast outpace. I mean, they were making probably 2-3 times the speed of sound in the atmosphere.
But how were those things powered, Vladimir? Because those things look much different than the pictures. You had an extensive array of saucer pictures with big German guns on them, like with tank turrets and a variety of
other. Yeah, much later generation of craft that didn't use any turbojet or rocket engines. These were spinning magnetic field craft powered by basically free gravitational energy. But the earlier models were powered with low-grade aviation-grade kerosene. The turbojet craft were air breeders. They would use atmospheric air.
Vladimir, what about the Foo Fighters themselves? In other words, these glowing balls that
Renato Vesco has about a chapter, maybe 20, 30 pages of the whole construction of the Foo Fighters. They were spherical machines. They were basically unmanned anti-aircraft weapons platforms. They would raise vertically. Mm-hmm. They would be guided with television cameras. The first television cameras in military usage were utilized probably on these craft. They would have heat-seeking infrared capability. They would have acoustic target-seeking capability. They would have what else? Magnetic target-seeking capability. Radio-controlled, remote-controlled. They would they had turbines in the center of the craft. I'm not sure whether they carried the oxidizer on board or they were air breathing. I have a suspicion that the Kugel Blitzes were non-air breathing, that they were carrying the oxidizer on board.
Vladimir.
Turbines. They were using turbojet turbines. Mm-hmm.
This with all of these Foo Fighters and German saucers during the war and the Allied shooting at them, you would have thought that they'd have shot one down in Austria or Yugoslavia or somewhere where somebody other than the Americans or the Russians or the Germans could get to it and either destroy it or take it.
Uh-huh.
Or even reports of bomber pilots or fighter pilots coming back saying, have you run across anything like this?
Very good question. Actually, the Foo Fighters had some automatic circuitry, and their very design was made in such a way that if you would puncture the outer shell with a machine gun or a cannon burst, the gases that were, because it was a double-shelled construction, and the outer shell was a porous, sintered ceramic material, ceramic metallurgy, probably developed for the first time in Germany, and gases would be emitted from the whole outer skin porous surface. So if you make a large hole through a bullet entry, gases would escape through this hole even more vigorously, and the craft would automatically move away from whoever is shooting at it. I mean, they had this built-in automatic feature. Renato Vesco talks on pages upon pages of all these things. Even if they shot something down, by the time it falls and explodes and burns down, I mean, the debris would be so mangled, it would take quite a bit of a genius of an engineer to put it all together. What type of a device was it flying? I think that the Allies not only captured, they may have captured shot devices, I don't know. I have no record of such instances, but they definitely captured a vast treasure of information from the underground bases in Germany after the war ended. I mean, they had about 300 underground facilities, according to Renato Vesco, that were huge underground cities. One of them, the Mittelwerk complex next to the concentration camp Dora, was 2 kilometers long by 1 kilometer wide. We're talking about millions of square yards of floor space, shop space.
If the viewers want to find out more, is there anything written on here? I know that we're going to next week go ahead and profile your interview with Jim Nichols, as well as some of the photos that you showed during your lectures. But is there anything that is in print? Are you presently working on a book or anything that these people would be, our viewers would be able to pick up? And
I have a long list of videos that we have made. Half of them are on the German anti-gravity technology, the German colony on the South Pole, secret space flights by the superpowers to the Moon, Mars, and beyond, according to the Alternative 3 and other scenarios.
Let me ask you one last question here on my part. The Germans, with the technological development that they've done, there was certainly some involvement by Hitler in some very strange and unusual things. Do you believe that the Germans themselves had any type of connection with extraterrestrials or alien races during the early parts of their development programs?
I've heard this story on numerous occasions. For example, I heard that there was a saucer crash near around Peenemünde, another saucer crash in the Bavarian Alps, which may have been used as an excuse by the German secret elite to peddle this flood of new technological information, this avalanche of information, to down, trickle it down into German economy and industry without having to explain exactly where they got it from. But I do think that the Germans were heavily involved in... they had contact with extraterrestrials, several races probably. And the more time passes, the more I'm willing to accept the idea that basically extraterrestrials have always been in contact with the major terrestrial governments, and especially the secret societies, which are the fifth column for the introduction of a particular extraterrestrial philosophy in our society. the German secret societies like the Thule Gesellschaft, the Vril Society, and numerous others that I don't even know, have all been in contact with different types of alien races. And from here comes this enmity and competition between terrestrial secret societies, which basically kind of support their extraterrestrial backers.
Let me ask one more little question here. You have an excellent selection of photos. Where in the world did you dig all those photos up?
Well, it said very simple in the Bible, search and you shall find. It's all in the public domain literature. One has to have the, the belief that these things would be found, and they really come one by one. And I'm waiting for information from Japan, information from Argentina, information from Russia, Czechoslovakia. People are coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Specifically.
And anyone who calls me brings in one new single photo, I simply download everything that I have.
Vladimir, now let's get specific about some of these. You have very good quality color photos of craft that are in the air and very advanced designs. Now, where did you find some of these?
A friend of mine, either he or some of his relatives shot a Kugelblitz in flight over Mount Rainier in the early 50s. He's living in Los Angeles. He was the owner of the negative of this photo, and he made me a copy.
Well, how about
it from him? He sold that later to Bill Hamilton, and the photograph appeared on the back of his book, Top Secret.
Ah. Well, what about some of those that had the big cannon and the turrets?
These are black and white. I shot them with my camera off my TV screen, and they are coming from the German video documentary film called UFOs or the Third Reich Striking Back. Which came through a friend of mine in Germany. He's a major New Age publisher and publicist in Germany. The film was originally produced by a secret German society, quite probably the Thule Society. They never put their name under the film, but this is what the grapevine says.
Okay.
And the Thule Society guys are kind of keepers of the flame. They preserve photographs, documentary material, and so on.
Vladimir, one of the things that I'm sure puzzles some of the audience is why wasn't Hitler pushing the use of this kind of technology with a greater extent? I mean, was this kind of technology being kind of hidden from Hitler by his own people?
Well, it's a good question and quite a complicated question. But I've heard stories that, for example, Hitler had a rule: never introduce in warfare a weapon that they didn't have developed the anti-weapon. They introduced the turbojet fighters and bombers only after they have introduced the anti-aircraft heat-seeking missiles in place. I've heard stories that actually the two nuclear bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were German construction, that by the end of the war the Germans were working on an antimatter bomb, time machine, and many other bizarre advanced technologies. Death ray and so on, free energy, but the antimatter bombs were as big as a pineapple and strong enough to devastate the whole of New York or London, which could not be done with a small Hiroshima-sized bomb.
Right, but the question is,
Hitler opposed the use of these nuclear bombs over England or the United States on a very racial reason. He said, "We are not in the business of killing Aryans." This was the same reason he told his general staff when he opposed the German army rolling over the escaping British and French soldiers at Dunkirk in, I think, 40 or 41, when they were defeated, and Hitler stopped his armies, allowing the Allied fleet to evacuate these defeated soldiers in England and basically use them for the D-Day invasion again.
Okay, but after the war, as the war was winding down, it was obvious that the Germans were defeated. Wasn't there a secret cadre of his own Nazi SS that took this technology?
Argentina.
And took it out of the country before it could be captured by the Allies?
Oh, yeah. I think from 42, 43, the smart guys in Germany had made their own plans that they are about to lose the war, so why don't we just let's work on some escape scenario. So every new technology was tested quietly, low-key, I mean low-profile. For example, they tested a greenish-looking radiation, a death ray in Romania, then they packed and crated and shipped everything to the South Pole. They would test it, make sure that it worked, and they would never try it again, and they would move it to the South Pole. So when Admiral Byrd arrived with a huge three-aircraft carrier, it's a triple armada descending on the South Pole from three directions, they were beaten in 2 weeks and hastily retreated. Yeah. I mean, probably the Germans had at least one smart move by not using these weapons in 44, 45 on the European theater, but concentrating everything they had in the South Pole theater.
Okay, now if such a technology, or if such a renegade Nazi force escaped to South America or Antarctica and has been there all this time, mm-hmm. unassailed by any of the Allies or Soviets, that's really pushing credibility to believe that such a group could still exist down there.
Evidence the rumor goes that there is a large city called the New Berlin.
Why haven't they tried to complete the goals of the Third Reich in the years since then?
Well, they not that they have tried, they have completed them. They have produced a master race on the South Pole, according to the rumor. They have genetically engineered and re-engineered themselves to the point where they live quite a bit longer. They have fewer diseases. They are probably able to, not probably, but they developed genetic engineering to such a perfection that, I mean, the Germans had hybrids between humans and animals 50 years ago in the concentration camps. So where are they now after 50 years? But this is a research that goes on hand in hand with the other superpower governments. My feeling and suspicion is that the tall, blonde, Nordic-looking guys that we see so often in the little gray abduction scenarios, they are in Bud Hopkins' books, they are in the UFO documentary UFOs Are Real, the Travis Walton abduction from Snowflake, Arizona, where he confronted a tall, blonde, Nordic guy in the big mothership, or possibly a German South Polar colony. These are the tall blondes, in my opinion. I mean, quite probably these are the Germans from the South Pole doing genetic experiments hand-in-hand with the Russians and Americans under the guidance and tutelage of many extraterrestrial races and the overseeing celestial management centers and power structures that run the whole show. Thank you very much for all the interest and for all the information, and we'll be talking again.
Okay, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Thanks, Roger.
Right.
Interesting stuff.
He's a heavyweight.
I know. From the outside, it would probably, if you haven't seen some of his material or seen some of the tape, you'd just step back and you'd...
Right, this is... You know, too much, right?
We have a tape that we're going to be running. In fact, I cut in on mm-hmm. some of the segments in the beginning mm-hmm. of the actual footage that he has and documentation of these crafts, and it's just really amazing. You would never think it the way that, you know, we thought we won the war, and yet we're still poo-hooing these flying saucers.
Well, you look at the fact that from what he's got, the pictures that he's got, and these are really phenomenal pictures. It demonstrates that if that technology existed at that point in time, and I'm not questioning that, that's not an issue, but seeing this stuff in the air and seeing what it is, there's been 50 years to play with that. And it means that they've had a 50-year lead like that.
Well, you know, it isn't so much that. Jim made a question, asked him a question, how come that if there was such an elite group of Nazis that got to leave.
Right.
You know, but if you look at the whole scenario, and even kind of Shane talked about a little bit on his show, the Illuminatis and the secret government that actually are the bankers that are running this, if they're running and funding a black operation like this to begin with, you know, they're going to take their piggy bank and move it. and they have the money to do it, and they have the ways, and if both continents are involved in something like that, they're going to allow that to happen. You know, the Americans came in and they moved all those, they created everything up and moved it up to Canada and then sent it back down to White Sands, and the Russians did the same thing with their group of people. So it isn't, you know, it really isn't that secret when you get down and see this kind of thing. Okay, but again, I'm gonna play devil's advocate a little bit here. If the Germans had this, and there was an elite type of a group, I mean, we saw all of the other stuff that they used. They even used it against the Brits, and some of the submarines were the most advanced submarines at their time. Why haven't we seen it since 19? If it's, this has been going on since the 30s and 40s, why haven't we? Why hasn't the public been aware of this? Why hasn't the public seen a flying saucer as much as they would like to say they have?
I think we've seen plenty of flying saucers. There's no question that we've seen exceptional numbers of craft here in the United States. We haven't recently seen a lot of craft. But during the 40s, late 40s, early 50s.
Early 50s, a lot.
Oh, there was a tremendous amount. Now, we had flaps in the 60s, and we had them in the 70s. It seems that even this year, there seems to be a very high number of sightings. We're getting some locally here. Some things are being seen in the air. There's more scuttlebutt from other places than the United States. And I think the only thing that's happening is that with the way the different UFO groups are set up, there isn't really that kind of central focus where sightings are being collated and the information got back out to the public, so we're seeing it, so we're knowing what's going on. And I think that there's a number of the craft that are out there now have cloaking capability, and generally we don't see them operating during the day. So that's another factor. It comes down to now whether the craft that are operating are, in other words, from here, or from somewhere else. That's really a very difficult question to answer right now.
Well, Tesla kind of had his finger on the pulse of things back in the 30s and just kind of backed off. I've heard Vladimir use the same thing in that machine that he was talking about, that death ray. He did have it for the government, and they loaded it on a train, and they even blew part of a mountain up, and the government just wouldn't use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing, too, is besides technology like that, we're seeing an awful lot of people who are having encounters. Now, who they're having encounters with, what these individuals are, we know they look a lot different than us. And it appears that, in other words, there is a program going on, and they're not really interested in us seeing craft or objects in the air. They're much, whoever or whatever's carrying out this agenda is much more concerned about keeping things quiet.
You have to realize that with the communications that we have nowadays and the sophistication that we have in radar and being able to put satellites and going to the moon, that each government, or anyway the superpowers, knows what the hell's going on. They know that something, if there's something down in Antarctica, they know what's down there. There's no hiding that. They know what's going on.
But they're just not telling us.
Well, that's what I'm getting about. I think it becomes more of a secret government. The more and more I get involved in this, the more and more I talk to people that'll come up to me and say, Ted, I was a radar man 20 years ago, and I was in North Dakota, and we scrambled jets over UFOs, and all of a sudden we were told from higher levels to erase everything. We haven't seen it. And just erase it. Just take it off like it wasn't even there. And he was telling me that when they do this type of thing, they have to go to three levels or four levels. So once it got to the fourth level, then it had to go back down and erase everything.
That
so
somebody at a very high level knows what's going on.
Right? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The medium Maria Orsic was leader of the Beautiful Young Ladies of the Vril Society. In pre-World War II Germany, the Sisters of Vril conducted research into psychic phenomenon, advanced propulsion technology, and saucer-shaped aircraft. The Vril Society, whose members included some who would later become notable members of the Nationalist Socialist Party in Germany, believed that many ancient civilizations owed their origins to refugees from Atlantis. They advanced the idea of a subterranean civilization ruled by an ancient parent race who had mastered free energy. This Aryan breakaway civilization was said to have survived the antediluvian cataclysms which ended the Ice Age and continued to thrive below the surface of the Earth. Nationalist Socialist Germany claimed the territory of New Swabia in Antarctica, sent an expedition there in 1938, and began building secret deep underground bases below the ice. They defeated a post-World War II attack by Allied forces in 1946, led by Admiral Byrd, who retreated in disgrace after suffering substantial damage and casualties, known as Operation High Jump. While the United States government continues to suppress this vril free technology, the Nationalist Socialist elite that did not surrender in 1945 have allegedly expanded a massive secret space program which now includes colonies on the moon and Mars. My name is Robert Sepper. Thank you for listening. See you next time.